The next case is 04-16-19, Linda Valentine versus PPG Industries. Mr. Larimer.
Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors, I would like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. And there are three primary issues I would like to review with you today on this appeal by Linda Valentine from the granting of summary judgment by the trial court in favor of the employer in this occupational disease claim under the workers' compensation statute. First, the erroneous imposition by the trial court of a burden of proof to establish general causation to a degree of scientific certainty. Second, the abuse by the trial court of its gatekeeper role by weighing the evidence instead of limiting its analysis solely to one to determine the reliability of the experts' opinions. And third, the failure of the trial court to perform its affirmative duty to examine all of the evidence presented to it, and in its written decision, to explain the basis for its decision that it found that the plaintiff's eminently qualified experts were found to be unreliable despite the cited evidence. Well, the facts of the case are complex, but can be highlighted very succinctly. David Valentine worked for PPG for 29 years as a lab chemist. In that capacity, he worked on a new product developed in the 60s and early 70s with 16 other men, and he dies of a condition called glioblastoma multiforme. Glioblastoma multiforme is a rare form of brain cancer that occurs at the approximate rate of 7 per 100,000. And this rare form of cancer killed not only David Valentine at 51, it killed his lab partner at 49. Now, this claim was submitted to the Industrial Commission, initially allowed, subsequently reversed and appealed into the Court of Common Pleas. And in that action before the Court of Common Pleas, the two specialists from Ohio State University Hospital who were called in to treat this man for this disease both testified by affidavits that in their opinion there was a direct and proximate causal connection to a reasonable medical probability between that occupational exposure and this death. But the trial court ruled as a matter of law that judgment was entitled to the employer because there could not be a scientific certainty assigned to specify what specific chemical caused this condition. And that is an erroneous law, and the court's exclusion of the plaintiff's experts is the error that we are addressing before you today. That ruling on inadmissible evidence must be viewed against the background of the workers' compensation law, because the workers' compensation law is not asking for extra damages. It's asking only for what is provided through the constitutional amendment and the statute, and the statute defines what is an occupational disease. And it has three requirements. The disease must be contracted in the course of the employment. The employment must be shown to have a risk or hazard of developing a disease that is greater than the public or employment in general. And there has to be medical proof showing a proximate causation to a reasonable medical probability, not certainty. And I am making the statement to you that there is no other language in the statute. There is no case considering any occupational disease cited in Ohio, and there is no policy inherent in why we created the workers' compensation system that would create an additional burden on an injured worker to specifically identify the chemical or chemicals, and it's more likely the combination of chemicals from a complex work situation over a 29-year period that creates this unusual disease.
But what does Daubert say about the role of a trial court as a gatekeeper with respect to the admissibility of this scientific evidence?
Daubert decision has some very specific guidelines on that. It says the rule is to be flexible, and you are to confine yourself to an analysis of the expert witnesses' methodology and their reference to recognized research. The Daubert has the very important sentence in there. No one is required to prove their case to a scientific certainty. Arguably, nothing can be proven with certainty by science. That's an important sentence in Daubert. So,
but we modified that in Miller and set forth some very specific standards for admissibility for our trial courts in Ohio.
Absolutely. And Miller is an excellent decision. And we are arguing that under the principles established in Miller, this case is undeniably, reliably documented by the doctors. And what it says is you are not to give up the concept that there are no safeguards for valid disputes in science, and you are to confine yourself only to whether that doctor, or in this case doctor, but that expert actually has some sound research behind them to make that decision. So I'm not really certain, Your Honor, how much more you can go into this. Miller is a great decision, and you just read it and follow the guidelines in there. So that is exactly what this court, in our opinion, did not do. And that really leads, the fact that it created this heightened burden of proof leads into the second and third issues that I raised in this argument today. And that is, the trial court is often given the standard of an abuse of discretion in reviewing these admissibility issues. But those standards involve a two-way street. The trial court has an affirmative duty to examine all of the evidence and to explain that its analysis of that evidence to find why there was a conclusion of unreliability. In this case, the court has completely failed in that. Because if you read the affidavits of the experts propounded here, you cannot reconcile it to the trial court's decision. There is a complete disconnect. For instance, the trial court, in assessing this issue of reliability, says there are no citations to epidemiologic studies that support the witness's opinion. And that is simply wrong. In fact, the three affidavits that we provided give not only the subject of these epidemiologic studies, they give the citations. The trial judge, if he had any question, could go look them up. And of course, we provided those articles to him. And you do not see a single word in the trial court's decision that said, I read the affidavits of your witnesses. I read the research that your witnesses are relying upon, and I am rejecting it for the following reasons. You don't see that. And that is an abuse of discretion and a total misuse of the Daubert standards. A trial court cannot misuse a heightened standard under Daubert as the springboard to require such a heightened burden of proof as to exclude anybody from this type of complex occupational exposure from having a compensable claim. But when you really study it, what the court's concern is the fact that we haven't been able to identify the specific chemical. And the whole issue under workers' compensation is that is not a controlling issue. This man had exposure to an unbelievable range of known carcinogens and chemicals that have a propensity to cause this brain tumor. There are numerous studies that document this. In this case, two men out of 17 develop a cancer that occurs 7 per 100,000. In the cited research out of Amoco in Illinois, six men from the same building, all white men between the age of 45 and 60, all chemists, developed the same glioblastoma multiforme. I mean, not only was it brain tumor, it was the same type of brain tumor. And that is the research that, when you read the affidavits, our doctors say, although we can't say with certainty what caused this, we know that there is cumulative evidence that occupational exposures over time with high intensity can and do cause brain tumors.
But the testimony, if I'm understanding this, is from even your experts, none of the chemicals involved here cause, to a reasonable degree of certainty, cancer, either alone or in conjunction with each other. And so you have this sort of look at all these people who've developed this condition, but none of these chemicals individually or collectively would cause that. And so you have this sort of disconnect, I think, is where the problem comes in. And so the court sort of looks at Miller or Daubert and says, well, if there's not a proximate cause, I'm not going to let it in.
The disconnect comes at the beginning of your question, because the doctors make a clear distinction. We cannot say with scientific certainty which chemicals cause this, but we can say within a reasonable medical probability that these chemicals over time will produce this condition, and that is the crucial issue here. And the fact that
the crucial issue is the standard, whether to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty or a reasonable degree of scientific probability.
Correct, and that is you're correct on that, Your Honor. And in the principles of proximate causation under tort law, which are applicable in a workers' compensation case, the standard is probability. It is not certainty. Daubert says you don't have to prove certain science. And if you had to prove certain science, you're going to release innumerable criminal defendants, because even DNA analysis isn't certain in identification, but we let it in because there's a high probability. And that's the issues that you've got to consider. Now, I think I've gone over my allotted time, and unless there are specific questions right now, I'll save my balance for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Larimer. Mr. Coughlin.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Moyer, justices, my name is Timothy Coughlin, and I, along with my colleague Karen Rubin, represent the appellees PPG Industries and PPG of Ohio with regard to the issue in this case as to whether the trial court abused its discretion in its role as gatekeeper in keeping out unreliable science. With regard to the opinion as to whether Mr. Valentine's brain tumor was occupationally related, as the court recognized, it is a matter of science, not a matter of scientists. The two affiants of the appellants were certainly qualified in the care, treatment, and diagnosis of brain cancer. They weren't epidemiologists, they weren't toxicologists. And therefore, it is the science that matters, not the scientist. It is the record from the court below in a 13-page opinion. I know that some of you were trial court judges in your past, and I would like you to think how many times you would be expected to write more than a 13-page opinion with regard to the exclusion of evidence. And if you follow the appellant's argument to its illogical end, that analysis has to be put over any time the trial court makes a decision on the admissibility of evidence. When the trial court decides to allow the expert to testify over a Miller or Daubert objection, it has would have that same duty.
Well, counsel, what did the trial court find? My reading was that they did find what Mr. Larimer said they found, and that is that because the injured worker's experts could not identify the exact chemical or chemical compound, their testimony should be disregarded.
It was not that specific, Your Honor. The questioning, which is set forth in the summary judgment motions that we put forth in the brief that was found by the trial court and by the Court of Appeals, laid out in great detail, that the appellant's experts agreed with Dr. Bigner and our epidemiologist that the only known cause recognized in the peer-reviewed literature for primary brain cancer is ionizing radiation. The trial court could have stopped there under the Daubert criteria adopted in Miller. The peer review has spoken. So the question is, what do we look at next? And we have cited the court to Rosen versus Sebagagi, that the courts lag science. The courts don't lead science. So when we look at the science and what these experts actually said.
So I need help on the science myself. I'm going back to your, I'm rewinding your statement. Your basis is that the only thing accepted in the scientific community for which there is a definite causal connection to brain cancer is exposure to radiation.
Your Honors, it's not even a definite cause. It's when the Court of Appeals in this case used a Hill criteria analysis to look at general causation. And a criteria that is recognized by courts across the country as the proper methodology to use in looking at general causation. And in that case, with regard to ionizing radiation, the epidemiology studies are overwhelming in demonstrating that therapeutic ionizing radiation can cause primary brain cancer. But when we look at, are there environmental causes of brain cancer? Other than that, the answer in the peer-reviewed literature is no. As the court in Furness versus Poise recognized, when looking at epidemiology studies, that when you have a study that says...
Well, I want to go back to my question. Did the trial court or did the trial court not say, I'm rejecting these folks because they can't identify the specific chemical?
They couldn't identify any chemical. Not the specific chemical.
Well, what did the court say? That's what my question is.
The court said,
you're giving me your interpretation of his witnesses. What my question is what did the court say about why it decided to exclude them?
The court indicated that based upon the appellant's expert's analysis, there was too great of a gap between what the science says, which is there is no recognized cause of brain cancer other than ionizing radiation, and an opinion that, and those experts agreed with that proposition, and the opinion that something in that workplace caused his cancer. Well, when this court in Murphy says that workers' comp matters have the same standards of proximate cause, there has to be an identification of what it was. What happened in that facility? What was he exposed to within that facility versus a family?
I'm going to try one more time. I'm still hearing a legal argument. What did the judge say?
The judge said that there was that disconnect, that the opinion didn't fit the science, that with regard to the potential exposures at that facility, there was no identification of any chemical that causes glioblastoma multiforme.
That's what was my question.
Do we get to an issue then of scientific certainty versus scientific probability, as Mr. Larimore has suggested to us?
No, Your Honor, because it's a reasonable degree of scientific certainty. And what we have when we look at that, and when you look at the methodology behind reaching that, we all come back to the scientific method that we all learned in grammar school. You have a problem, you form a hypothesis, you test that hypothesis, and you draw a conclusion. Here, the studies that they are relying on clearly come out and say, by the study authors, at best we have a hypothesis. That is as far as science can get with regard to his opinions. And when you're only at the hypothesis stage, you have not reached a reasonable degree of medical probability or reasonable degree of scientific certainty.
Well, now, Justice O'Donnell asked you about those words. Is Mr. Larimer correct that the magic words are a reasonable degree of scientific probability in these cases? Because that is what the doctor's affidavits said they were testifying to. Is that the correct legal term?
It is the question of whether it's a reasonable degree, whether it's medical certainty or scientific probability. What is the reasonable degree? And in order to understand the reasonable degree, you have to look at the science. And here, again, the peer review has spoken on that science. And they acknowledge.
So their affidavit states the correct standard. You're saying The affidavit, however, ignores the underlying or flies in the face of the underlying science.
Exactly. A lawyer drawn affidavit that mouths the magic language for admissibility of a standard, but simply is not enough.
Is that the job of a trial judge, to take the affidavit, which meets the legal standard in terms of setting forth the magic words, and a well-credentialed doctor or doctors who give you an affidavit, meet the magic words, does the trial judge then sit down and, is that the duty of the trial judge to sit down and review the literature?
Under
to see if that measures up?
It did not have the affidavit in a vacuum, Your Honor. There was discovery depositions taken, there were submissions made, there were other affidavits by the appellee's experts. It was not in a vacuum. And when the complete record is looked at, which is why we believe this court has, based upon the complete accurate record properly before the trial court, has the ability to take that next step towards joiner and say, it's got to fit. That because if you just look at the affidavit, if that's the only thing that this court would require of a gatekeeper role, you can get in the testimony that the world is flat. That I've, as we put in our brief, I've ridden on the space shuttle. I've seen all the Hubble telescope photographs. I've sailed on a ship. And I have been in the field of astronomy for 30 years. I have my PhD. I work for NASA. The world's flat. If there's that kind of disconnect between the actual science and the opinion under Miller, under Daubert, and we believe the next step under Joyner, that opinion should never see the light of day in front of a jury, because it is that type of opinion that has led states across this country to enact the tort reform that it has. Because when you have the let it all in kind of mentality, you end up with companies, entities deciding, I'm not going to do business in an environment like that. I can move my resources anywhere. And am I going to practice in a place where I am at risk where anything comes in terms of the resources that I now have to spend, in terms of lawsuits that I have to defend that have no scientific merit?
Well counsel, go ahead. Just
I was going to say, counsel, the court below also relied in part upon evidence rule 702, found that we had the witness's testimony was beyond the lay person's knowledge. That's A. The affidavits qualified as specialized knowledge with people who were trained, and that was B. But it was C, what we've been talking about here, the fact that the scientific information may not have been validly derived from the widely accepted principles. Is that also something you want to comment on?
I would submit, Your Honors, that you can decide this case without taking the next step to joiner under a 702 and Miller analysis, where this court adopted the four guideposts of Daubert. Because when you do look at the 702C, the three criteria in terms of the procedure, test, or experiment, and you actually look at what the study authors say and the conclusions they reach, they do not get to a reasonable degree of medical or scientific probability. As the courts across this country have said, that courts should demand the same kind of intellectual rigor in the courtroom from an expert as they do in their practice. Neither of these experts nor anyone else has published a peer review article that says any one of these supposed chemicals that he was exposed to cause glioblastoma multiforme. No one has.
Counsel, would you comment on your opposing counsel's statement that there should be a more relaxed standard because this is a workers' comp case?
I had truly thought that this court did not take that issue, and that has been a long-settled issue since Murphy, that The same proximate cause standard applies in this case as any other tort case, and that is why this case presents this court on this record the perfect opportunity to put this court in with others who have adopted the FIT test, because this court needs to give the trial courts and the courts of appeals guidance. As the Fourth District cried out, there is no guidance from this court in this context. And that's why I really have come with three takeaways for this court. The first and primary is to adopt the Joiner FIT test to give guidance across the board on all experts. With regard to toxic tort matters that particularly affect this case, that this court approve of the analysis that the Fourth District did under the Hill criteria, which has been adopted by many courts across the country as the methodology. And under Daubert, when we're looking at methodology, that's the guidepost that should be applied. Clearly, appellant's experts did not do that. And finally, with regard to the general causation, specific causation dichotomy for proximate cause, that this court take one step beyond Dillo versus Young, where I think in 1966 it recognized that dichotomy, but it should come out and explicitly adopt the general causation, specific causation requirements so that we don't have situations like this where general causation doesn't exist and an expert, a treating physician, is rendering a specific causation opinion. And for those reasons, we would ask that this court find there was no abuse of discretion and affirm the trial court's decision and the Court of Appeals decision, which are on incredible records. And I would stack the Fourth District's opinion up against any Federal Circuit Court Daubert opinion, in this country with regard to the quality of the analysis that was done there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coughlin. Mr. Laramie, you've saved a little more than 4 minutes of your time.
The argument you just heard was just that argument. And we are here because when you look at the evidence is to the contrary. It shows that there is very significant evidence that shows occupational exposures will cause these brain tumors. And that's exactly what the doctor stated.
Counsel, didn't your experts, was it Dr. Miner and Dr. Newton?
They said we cannot identify the specific certain chemical, but we can verify that groups of chemicals with high exposure will produce this.
I thought, based on the trial court's opinion, that they admitted that ionizing radiation was the recognized cause of this type of cancer. Would you agree with that?
To a limited extent, and if I can proceed. They both reiterate multiple times that we know ionizing radiation causes brain cancer because of the unintended result when radiation therapy was used to treat skin conditions.
So there's statistics, there's studies, there's scientific evidence that
it's
makes
conclusive.
That irrefutable.
That's correct. But there is a vast production of evidence which we have cited. And I won't quote you because it's so long, but it says specifically, it is the probable findings of this epidemiologic study that it is the chemist's occupation with its inherent hazards that produce this increase of brain cancer.
Did they name, though, the chemicals?
So they absolutely did not, and they don't have to. This is workers' compensation. This is not toxic tort. If I was suing PPG on intentional tort, I would have to prove that they knew what chemical. A substantial certainty of that chemical is going to cause it.
You need to convince me that there should be a different causation standard for workers. Why?
Because two reasons. Number one, that's what the statute says. Let me reiterate that. Remember, this is not common law recovery. The workers' compensation system is in derogation of the common law when we modified the Constitution for the benefit and safety of the workers.
At the administrative level?
At all levels. The recovery is limited. Okay, the procedures go according to proximate cause and the principles of tort law, but your recovery is limited, and the elements that you prove are different. And let me kind of explain. If this were a criminal situation, and three gang members with hoods shoot an informant, but only one bullet kills him, now the prosecution cannot win on certainty as to which one committed first-degree murder. But they can certainly prove attempted murder, conspiracy to commit murder. So different elements of proof require different elements of evidence.
But, Mr. Larimore, in the Murphy case, our court held that in the proximate cause, in the workers' compensation context, the definition principles governing proximate cause are the same as apply in the field of torts.
Your Honor, absolutely correct. And Murphy is in our opinion, because the burden of...
But maybe I misunderstood. I thought in response to the Chief Justice, he said, convince me there should be a different standard for workers' comp as opposed...
The standard of proof is reasonable medical probability. That's the standard. But what are you proving happened according to medical probability? You are proving that it was the occupation that killed this man.
And so you don't think that there should be a different standard for workers' compensation proximate cause as opposed to torts?
No, but what you prove...
Same standard.
The same standard, and it's reasonable medical probability, and that's been met. And it's scientific probability, and that is met with our evidence that we cite. And if a trial court is going to usurp the constitutional right to a trial by jury, it has an affirmative duty. It's a two-way street, and it has to explain. If you look at Joyner, they go into great detail as to how the court analyzed. They had a rigorous examination of every piece of evidence and explained why it wasn't found. But in our case, you cannot find a better incidence of fit. When they took the genetic studies of human tissue and found the specific gene that led to the glias, and then had benzene induce those tumors and come up with the same specific gene. There's no closer fit. It's just the court never read it. So this rule that you are putting
out. Please sum up, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.